Thanks for listening to the Jazz Joe Hall Show podcast. Today on the pod, the NDP's new childcare rollout promises thousands of dollars of savings for parents. We'll drill down on the numbers and see what it actually means for your family budget. Plus, can James Cameron's Avatar save the movie theater business? Also, we look at the continued popularity of the side hustle for young entrepreneurs. That's all next on the Jazz Joe Hall Show podcast. Let's start today with some good news. BC has announced cuts to monthly child care fees for families with children who are of kindergarten age or younger. The Ministry of Education and Child Care said the fee reduction will save families up to $550 per child per month, depending on whether their child is in group care or family-based care. Today's long-awaited announcement is the result of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's 2021 budget promise of $30 billion over 5 years to nationalize child care and make all spaces $10 a day by 2026. Joining us now is Jennifer Whiteside, the Minister of Education and Childcare. Oh, sorry, that's Minister Chen is joining us. Hello, Minister.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. We were expecting Minister Whiteside, but we will speak to you because I know you're playing an important role in this issue as well. Walk me through this first and foremost. When does this begin?
Well, we've already started our Child Care BC plan in 2018 to reduce parent fees and accelerate the creation of spaces and at the same time supporting early childhood educators. It is part of our 10-year plan to bring affordable, quality, inclusive child care to all BC families. And today we're really happy that through our partnership with the federal government, we're going to cut fees more on top of the existing $350 fee reduction, that we're going to add another $550 fee reduction to bring a total up to a $900 savings for families. And this is huge, as you can imagine, that lifts a huge burden, as childcare sometimes can be the highest cost on the family's expenses.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've talked about $10 a day daycare. In regards to the entire province, making sure that all folks can be have access to this, is the 2026 target still the target?
I would say we are well underway. Currently, we have a lot of dedicated $10 a day spaces. And on top of this fee reduction announcement that's going to start in December, that is going to bring a lot of affordable child care across BC communities. And at the same time, families up to the income of $111,000, so a lot of middle-income families, can benefit from additional child care benefits that cut their fees to $10 or less. So this is really part of our work to make sure childcare can become a core service that families can count on.
Now, is the goal ultimately to follow something similar to what they're doing in Quebec?
Well, we've learned a lot from Quebec. They have some challenges, but they also have shown how investing in childcare is not just good for our young kids, but it's good for our families and good for our economy when parents can return to work. Today at the announcement, I shared about how parents have been struggling with childcare and that prevented them from returning to the workforce. And I'm a mother who's always struggled with childcare, and I just cannot tell you how excited I am that since we started the launch of our childcare plan in 2018, we've made significant progress. We're going to continue to build spaces, and we have to support early childhood educators. This is a workforce that has not got the attention and the support that they deserve for many, many years. But we've started that work in 2018. We're going to continue to make sure, again, childcare can be a core service that all families can count on.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry at all that sometimes federal programs start with a loud bang, which is we're going to provide the money, and then over the years they start whittling away some of that funding, and it may not just be in the first few years, but later on, and then the province gets sort of burdened with all of the spending when it comes to, in this case, $10 a day care. But it's constantly a conversation, I know, behind the scenes among public servants, that the feds come in, they announce something, and then they start whittling away some of the funding that they had promised. Any worry over the long term that maybe we may be walking into something like that again?
Well, the good news for BC is that we already started this before they even jumped on board. We started this in 2018. Our provincial investment is over $2.7 billion now, over 3 years. The federal investment of the $3.2 billion over 5 years, it is definitely really helpful and helped to accelerate our plan. But that being said, I think provincial government, we want to be the leader on this. We've even made a lot of changes to legislation to really entrench our investments in the system. system. We hope, of course, the federal government will continue with the investment, as a lot of families do count on the fee reduction, do count on the benefit. Our early childhood educators also count on our wage enhancement from the province as well. So I think with political will, we can go a long way, and I look forward to continue investing so families can benefit and our economy can benefit from childcare investments.
So correct me if I'm wrong here. Right now, you know, we've been talking about $10 a day daycare. The average prior to this announcement was about, families are paying about $50 a day, roughly?
Well, it really depends on the cost of childcare. Some families are already paying $10 a day since we started the investment in 2018. But you're right, a lot of families are still paying high-cost childcare, especially with the cost of living going up and the cost of operation for childcare centers going up as well. And that is why government has to continue to adjust along the way. So along with this announcement that we're reducing parent fees significantly, and by the end of this year, for example, we're also going to more than double our dedicated $10 a day site. We are also increasing support for childcare providers as well, so they can adjust and they can make sure that they are continuing to provide quality care to all families. So this is really a comprehensive plan. This is not a patchwork. We have over a few dozens of initiatives that we've rolled out since 2018, and we're not going to stop. We're going to continue to invest and make progress. We're 5 years in of our 10-year plan, and I'm quite confident with all the parties, all the federal government, provincial government, and we now have a lot of municipalities and school districts, indigenous communities, and all the child care providers on board, we can really make child care a core service and a reality that all families can count on. And this is no longer a struggle for families.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Minister. Really appreciate your time. I know it was a last-minute conversation, but I'm glad you could make it on. And we loved having you on. We'll look forward to having you in the studio soon to chat about the program as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
This is the Jazz Joe Hall Show on 980 CKNW.
What you're listening to are sounds from James Cameron's 2009 science fiction hit Avatar. It has been taken off Disney Plus's streaming service temporarily. As the movie sequel nears release, the 2009 Avatar will have a limited 2-week run in movie theaters and will return to Disney Plus before Avatar The Way of Water releases in December 16th. It's been 12 years since the original Avatar was released, grossing $3.6 billion Canadian at the global box office, and only time will tell if its sequel can replicate the same level of success. Some have asked, why did it take so long for the sequel? Well, the short answer is that the dazzling and costly array of visual effects means these films spend forever and a day in pre-production. Also, majority of the sequel was filmed underwater, and new motion capture technology had to be developed to accomplish the feat. Of course, all of this is occurring as audiences are slow to return to watching movies at the theater, as streaming services have trained families to wait for the studio's movies at home rather than experience them in theaters. Joining us now to discuss the return of Avatar and the struggling box office is Rick Forchuk. Mr. Forchuk, of course, is a movie blogger at Rick's Picks and a regular columnist for TV Week magazine. Rick, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, good to be here, Jazz.
So how big, I mean, there's lots of big movie releases coming out of Hollywood usually, even in a post-COVID world, but how big is Avatar 2?
Avatar is really, really, really big. And this movie, the original, and the sequel will be out in December. So we're seeing the release of the original, a re-release, in three formats. You can watch it in 2D, you can watch it in 3D, or you can watch it on the IMAX screen. And this was the first movie ever to gross more than $2.5 billion worldwide. Now, it's since been passed by Avengers Endgame, but this re-release will put more money in the till, and that will likely change all of that as well. So this is to help remind us what a great film it is, and to keep us really anticipating the Christmas season and the new Avatar film, which is going to be sensational. And there are three others in post-production at this time. So James Cameron, who is a total genius, has been working on these films simultaneously. He's re-releasing this one. I'm not sure that it's a financial need on his part as much as it is an artistic need for him to get people remembering what a fine story it is and what a fine film it is, Jazz.
Why do you think it has this appeal for all this time? What is its appeal?
Well, a couple of things. Most people don't know the mechanics behind what I'm about to say. but you feel what you see on the screen in a different fashion. For example, James Cameron is not only an outstanding writer, outstanding director, outstanding producer, he is an inventor. When he made the original Avatar movie, he had to actually invent a new kind of 3D camera and a new kind of computer-generated imagery in order to do this. And that's why when you see Avatar in 3D, it does not feel like you're looking at a screen of something that's in 3D, but rather it feels that you are in the screen because you almost feel things on your peripheral vision, that you're inside that action. Also, it's a great story, and it's even more relevant now than when it first came out in 2009, Jazz, given what has happened all over the world, but specifically in Canada, in terms of Indigenous people, because the whole thing about Avatar, the story is, it takes place on a moon named Pandora, which is in the Alpha Centauri system in the far-flung future. Human beings are there to rape the land and pillage the land of unobtainium and other rare minerals, and they don't care what they do. So they have taken the indigenous species, and they have set them aside and essentially destroyed them. So it is a parallel to what we have seen with the process of colonialism in our own world. And it's, as I said, even more relevant because back in 2009 when this came out, we hadn't been thinking about residential schools and we hadn't been thinking nearly to the same degree about the kind of treatment on behalf of one part of humanity that was given to the other part of humanity. So Cameron is so brilliant that he's literally created new technology to create a new way of seeing a movie. So when we see the new Avatar movie in December, it is going to be a quantum leap ahead of that again. A very, very interesting man, extremely smart. He did Titanic, but then he went from there and reinvented the way to do underwater photography so he could go down and do a documentary at the real Titanic and see it in ways we've never seen it before. So I could talk a lot about James Cameron. I'm very impressed with his genius, for sure, Jazz.
Rick, this is all happening in the midst of a movie industry that is in trouble in many cases. You have people not attending movies like they once did. That was a trend already. COVID has sped that up. Part of it is also because the movie schedule, those usual Friday new movies that usually come in, the pipeline has been pretty empty. If you think back in the last 6 to 8 months, the one movie that has probably sort of reinvigorated sort of the old Hollywood would be Top Gun Maverick. What role will Avatar play in your mind in providing Hollywood with a shot in the arm in regards to that old Tinseltown magic?
Yeah, well, you hit it right on the head. It is true. Audiences had already been kind of shying away from theaters when COVID struck. COVID did not strike a mortal blow, but a near mortal blow to the movie business. And you are also right that what's in the pipeline is minimal. And that's because during COVID, a lot of productions that would have occurred didn't occur. So now that we're kind of on the other side of COVID, it's not finished yet, but we're hopefully getting there. There is not much product for us to see. And you're also right about Top Gun Maverick. Thank goodness for that movie, because it has reinvigorated people's interest in going to a theater. And I suspect that Avatar and its sequel to come in December will do exactly the same thing. And I would strongly urge you to go back and see it. For those who say, well, I already saw it, I don't have to see it again. Or for those who have said, well, I watched it on DVD or I watched it on pay-per-view, not the same movie at all. And even if you saw it back in 2009, trust me, you have not remembered most of what really, really took off in this movie. So go back and have a look and realize what a film can really be and what it can really do. And I hope, for sure, for selfish reasons, that this does a lot, Jazz, to reinvigorate the movie business worldwide, not just in North America, but worldwide. And I hope that it gives James Cameron the kind of financial shot in the arm that allows him to keep doing what he's doing, and that is making outstanding product and encouraging others to do exactly the same. So That's how I see it, Jazz.
Yeah, you raise a very good point. I mean, when I watched Top Gun Maverick, I wanted to watch it at the theater because it's a different feeling. And we all have big screen TVs at home and great sound systems if you want. But it's not a movie theater still, and Top Gun Maverick proved that. And I guess this is another one of those rare movies. A lot of them you can watch from home, and a lot of the streaming services, even HBO, like when you watch Game of Thrones or something like that, they do have the feel of a movie, the look of a movie. But when you have a movie like Avatar coming out and its sequels, it's one of those rare movies you do actually want to watch at a movie theater.
Yeah, and it's not just for the big screen and the big sound. I mean, that's a big part of it. But it's not just that. It's sitting in a room with a bunch of people in the dark sharing a common experience and feeling things in common and doing things in common as you worry, as you stress, as you rejoice. All the things that happen in a great movie occur. And then filing out afterwards and talking to people as you go down the stairs and into the washroom afterwards and out to the theater lobby, talking to strangers about, wow, wasn't that amazing? Wasn't that great? I saw this in Top Gun Maverick many times where people just wanted to talk about it after the movie because we had all shared something very special. So I'm not a shill for the theaters, but I am a shill for great entertainment. And I'm going back to see this one. I would encourage anybody to see it. No matter how you've seen it before, come see it again.
That's great advice. Rick, thank you so much, my friend.
Thank you, Jazz.
Living costs and inflation on the rise in Canada, younger millennials and Gen Zs are looking to newer sources of income as micro-entrepreneurs. According to a new survey, the RBC Small Business Poll found 74% of Canadian small business owners and aspiring entrepreneurs are motivated to start a small business or side hustle because of rising costs of living. Among Gen Z respondents, this percentage jumps to 84%. A strong majority of millennial entrepreneurs surveyed in the study said their main objective for starting a business was to create a source of income to support themselves. Joining us now to talk about this issue is Tom Conway, CEO of Small Business BC. Tom, thank you for speaking to us today.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of this survey? Is this a case of just entrepreneurial young people and millennials wanting to go their way and start their own business? Or do you think there's something deeper here that COVID has perhaps motivated some of these people to start their own businesses?
Yeah, I think that it's probably a combination of both of what you just said. I think, you know, when I look at the survey, it's talking about 74% of all Canadian small business owners, not just Gen Z. And that's what we found actually too here at Small Business BC. We provide services for entrepreneurs who are looking to start their business. So we have a lot of folks who are coming into the office or calling in and trying to find out how they can start a business and have various questions that our team can help them with. But I think that it's partially because of COVID, you know, and the pandemic. It put a lot of people in a position where they had a lot of time to think about what do they really want to do with their lives. Mm-hmm. But also the economy is an impact on everybody here, especially in British Columbia. It's a very expensive place to live. And so, as I noted in the survey, it looks like, you know, that's a motivator for some folks to start their own business or create a side hustle so that they're working and have this small business on the side.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things the survey was talking about was just rising living costs, that you actually need a different income beyond your main income. I mean, when you're trying to start up a business, I mean, you always have to have a love for it and a passion for it. But right. In regards to rising living costs, that may be not the main reason you hope people don't get into that business, but it's unfortunate, isn't it, that living costs are at the point where people actually need to have more than just one job.
Exactly, yeah. And when you're talking about individuals, they need more than one job. Even in families, you know, you find folks with, you know, they've got maybe more than one side hustle going on in addition to their day jobs that they're keeping too in order to survive in this economy. So, yeah, everything else is rising. All the costs are rising. What isn't rising as fast are incomes, unfortunately. So this is one way to supplement that.
Mm-hmm. In regards to the term side hustle, have you, in your experience with your organization, found most of these side hustles are generally run by one person or two, that these are not big businesses? These are fundamentally micro businesses run by an individual or a couple of individuals that are trying to make it work.
Exactly. No, that's exactly what it is. In fact, in British Columbia, 61% of all businesses are small businesses are sole proprietors.
Hmm.
So when you're talking about over 550,000 small businesses in BC, 61% of those, think about it, are individuals working on their own, right? So, yeah, it's good that they have access to services like those provided by Small Business BC, because sometimes it can feel, you can feel awfully alone, right?
Mm-hmm. In regards to the small businesses, broadly speaking, here in this province, how would you describe the recovery now post-COVID?
You know, I would be a generalization for me to say so, but I think, you know, that we lost many businesses during the height of the pandemic, and I think we continue to look at losing some businesses, unfortunately, because of either they've not been able to meet their rent payments, so they've had to shut down their bricks and mortar stores, or they've found other ways to generate that income, and so they've decided to leave. I think that it's stabilizing. I think that I do see, at least here in the Lower Mainland, I do see some businesses coming back. I haven't been in all of the communities throughout the province, so I can't speak to everybody throughout the province, but we do see some businesses coming back, and throughout the height of the pandemic and now, we have always seen folks coming in who want to start a business. So there's always been that energy, even through the height of the pandemic.
Yeah. I recall watching some TV news stories, this is probably about a year and a half ago, in regards to small businesses, micro businesses, expressing concerns over closures and COVID. And I remember watching one, and I think it was business built in or based in Langley or Surrey in a warehouse district. And all they did was help you plan birthday parties, whether it be for kids or even larger birthday parties. But, you know, you could imagine maybe one or two people and then probably relying on a wide breadth and depth of suppliers along the way. You know, you shut those businesses down for a month or two. It's significant, isn't it? I mean, I'm always amazed at how small these businesses can be and the money they do generate. But just like that, it can come to an end.
Exactly, especially when you have something like the pandemic that would force shutdown. So on a business that is setting up birthday parties, if you can't have a birthday party where people are having to be socially distanced and things like that, and you shut down the party, you shut down the business.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you can find, you know, some other business to partner with, to hold on to, there are funding opportunities available. We also direct people to certain funding opportunities that could be available for them. But you have to have a good business plan, which we also provide, and in order to get that funding. And so, yeah, there's a lot of factors in that, in whether or not that business can continue. And when you have outside factors like a pandemic, that only hurts it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's driven, the pandemic itself has driven the innovation beyond just obviously Gen Z and millennials wanting to open their small businesses or have a side hustle, but it must, at the end of the day, driven a significant amount of innovation for those that did survive.
I think it definitely does. I think one of the big things, you know, that's come out of that I was surprised actually by in the early days of the pandemic, finding out how many businesses didn't have an online presence, didn't have a website, didn't have social media. And, you know, that can happen when you're the only person running your business. You know, you're working on what is the most important thing of the day. But if you can't get the word out to customers, that's challenging. And if you don't have a bricks and mortar place where people are going to come, you need that online presence and an e-commerce platform. And so we're working with the federal government on a grant, the CDAP, the Canada Digital Adoption Program, to help those businesses, give them a grant of $2,400 to get that website up and running, to get that e-commerce platform up and running.
That is wonderful news, and it's great to see that people are actually very much interested in starting their own businesses, particularly Gen Z and millennials especially. Tom, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jazz. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Jazz Joe Hall Show podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple or Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can always listen to the Jazz Joe Hall Show live Monday to Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. on 980 CKNW and connect with me on Twitter at Jazz Joe Hall BC. Talk to you next time.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.